Okay, hello everyone. It's my pleasure to introduce you our next speaker, Tony Basquiat. He is a co-founder and the lab director of Acumen Security. Pioneer to Acumen, Tony was a member of the Cisco certification team, guiding product through both FIPS 140 and the Common Criteria certification. Before Cisco, Tony was both a Common Criteria evaluator and a CSTO manager. Please join me to welcome Tony for his talk on what is Suite B.
Thank you guys. So today I'm going to go ahead and talk about what is Suite B and how it relates to government certifications. So as you know, the call for papers came out a while ago. So this was, we had actually had a white paper up on our website about this. So I said, oh, I have a great topic. So I know I'm going to present it. Then we're looking on the NSA website a couple months ago. And I said, oh, wait a minute. This is weird. So then I said, oh, I either A, am going to have a bunch of people listening to me talk, or B, have no one listening to me talk because there's no more Suite B. But that's not the case, obviously. You all are here, so. So what are we going to talk about today? Just a little bit of who I am, not much, I promise. Some background on Suite B. What is it? Why is it here? A little bit of history. What's covered, what it includes, what it doesn't, how does it relate to crypto protocols that are that we use, and then finally, how does it relate to some of the certifications that we do, just sort of a mapping. So just getting started, I've been doing this for a while, started back in 2002, I think. I've been, as was mentioned, I was part of a certification lab, and then I was part of a big vendor, and now I'm part of a lab again, so that's me. Okay, let's have a little background here. What is Suite B and why do we care? All right, so the government was facing a problem. Building crypto, building GOTS crypto in particular, was neither cost-effective nor resource-effective. Industry was there. They were developing new, interesting features, and they just didn't have the time or the money, or I guess they did, but to be competitive with what was available commercially. So NSA said, "Well, we need to be able to leverage commercially available crypto." So they developed a suite of commercially available crypto that was testable, efficient, secure, that that they could use to protect information all the way up to top secret. And that is Suite B. Now, what Suite B really is supposed to be is the current state of the art, strongest, most secure, and efficient commercial cryptography. It's testable. It's widely known. It's available. What this will do for them is it reduces costs, allows them to stay current with current technology, and keeps them competitive, saves us, the taxpayers, money. Okay, so just a little bit of a history about Suite B. So this has been going on now, going on 10 years plus. Back in 2005, NSA introduced the Suite B, introduced the identified the different algorithms that were going to be included, and how they could be used, and we'll talk about that just in a moment. 6 years later, Canada says, you know what, this is a pretty good idea. Let's jump on and do that. So now all of North America was accepting Suite B as crypto that could be used for top secret classification. Then they got even more aggressive. Back in 2012, CNSSP 15 was issued. That said, okay, starting October 1st, 2015, everything has to use Suite B cryptography, essentially. So, you know, everybody's great. So there's a little bit of momentum building. People are starting to talk about it. And then the summer, the Sweet Bee website was updated. It said, hey, everybody slow down. There's a bunch of advances coming in cryptography. Let's reconsider our strategy here is essentially what happened. Now, one thing that, and in my dealings and talking with people that I wanted to emphasize is that they aren't saying don't. They aren't saying don't use it. They still want you to use it. They're just saying, just be aware that this is current best practice, but there's more coming. And it's gonna be different. Then you're probably gonna have to do some more work, frankly. But do it if you're considering doing it, if you want to. So what that's done is essentially remove that requirement that as of October 1st, all the national security systems needed to use Sweet Bee. So that's where we are today. We have sort of an updated list of things, and we're in a little bit of a holding pattern until we figure out what's next, or until they figure out what's next. I'm going to talk a little bit about this. It's kind of a historical concept now because they don't have different levels of security, but the way that Sweet Bee was originally proposed was that you'd have two sets, two categories of crypto algorithms. One that would be able to be used for up to secret data classification, and then that would be able to be used all the way up to top secret. Now, as I mentioned, this is kind of a historical concept because now everything it's just positioned as up to top secret classification. And basically what they did is they've taken out the crypto that could be potentially compromised using quantum computing. So previously, and again, this is a little bit historical, min level of 128 bits or 128 bits of encryption was basically you could protect up to secret, and then 192 bits could be used all the way up to top secret. So what's covered? Okay, so there are a number of different classification things that are actually covered by Sweet Bee, and they're all your sort of typical crypto-related stuff, right? So you have bulk encryption and decryption. Asymmetric algorithms, so things like key exchange, et cetera. And then also digital signature and hashing. Your sort of your building blocks, your crypto building blocks that you would use for your different operations. If you were going to talk to someone over a network or protect something that was stored. So it covers everything that you sort of need to make a working crypto system. So now what are the allowed algorithms or what can you use? So historically, when you were talking about bulk encryption, you were either using AES 128-bit AES or 256-bit AES. So in most of the use cases, it was AES-GCM. There was sort of a transitional use case that was previously okay, where you could use CBC mode. However, now it's listed as AES 256. And that's blanket, by the way, all the way up to top secret classification. So here's some of the more interesting updates. So key establishment. Previously, the only sort of allowed key establishment was elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman. What the update in August did, not only removed the weaker of the two available groups, Diffie-Hellman groups, what it also did was it added back some of the more traditional crypto that's sort of more commonplace, although EC is catching up at this point. You have your finite fill crypto, Diffie-Hellman, as long as you use the minimum modulus of 3,072 bits. And RSA, same thing here. As long as you use 3,072 bits RSA, both of these for RSA key wrap, you could use both of these as part of key establishment. This is, in my opinion, this is a good thing, right? So now maybe some of vendors who they're asking, NSA is asking you, you know, sort of slow down your plans. If you haven't done Sweet Bee yet, there's going to be more coming, so plan accordingly. But what they're saying here is, well, in the meanwhile, there are some crypto that you probably have in there that you can start using now. So I think that goes a long way to bridging some of those gaps maybe that were there originally. Digital signatures, again, they had originally said you couldn't use any RSA-based digital signatures. They added that back in, so now you can use, again, 3072-bit modulus RSA for digital signatures. And then just being consistent with removing anything that was bin level of security 128, they also removed SHA-256. So now it's minimum SHA-384. So basically, this update, what it's done is it's made it a little looser and a little easier potentially to be compliant with, but it's also removed some of the lower level stuff. Protocols. So that's great. So that Sweepy crypto is great for like building block type things. You know, I'm going to protect something on me. What algorithm selection should I use? So it's also a good best practice. But really, it's how it applies to crypto protocols that's important. And as with any crypto protocol, you have to have agreement between the parties, or you're not going to be able to talk to each other. So, NSA went out over the last couple years and created a suite of RFCs that addressed how you would apply Sweepy to the protocols, to different protocols. Now, in particular, the ones that we sort of focused on here were the ones that are most commonly included in common criteria, or FIPS, or DoD certifications. SSH, TLS, and IPsec. These are the ones that if you look on the different lists, these are capabilities. These are the protocols that are actually listed in the NDCPP as available protocols to protect remote communication. So this is sort of, these are the protocols that we actually sort of focus on. Now, with that said, I mentioned that these were written over the last couple years, and we just had a nice update August. So these don't necessarily reflect the current vision of Sweepy as it is. So in talking with some people, they're still NSA is still considering what to do with these RFCs. So there'll probably be some changes, whether they are updated to reflect the interim stuff or if the future presented Sweepy, they'll wait for that. I'm not sure. But in looking at the RFCs themselves, you can sort of extrapolate the crypto algorithms, if you will, that would still be applicable, or the selections. The reason being, basically what they've done previously is, what NSA has done is removed minimum level of security 128, and all those RFCs were sort of broken into that. So we're gonna look. First, let's look at Sweepy within SSH. So the first thing you'll notice, it's divided into encryption and integrity, key exchange, and authentication. Now, the RFC defined it as two separate, right? Two separate min levels of security for 128-bit and 192-bit. Basically what you're gonna see, and this is sort of commonplace, is that those building blocks that I had mentioned earlier, those are all selections within the protocol as it's already defined. So if you want to do a Sweepy compliant SSH session, you're going to use ASGCM with 256-bit keys. You're going to use elliptic curve, 384-bit elliptic curve, Diffie-Hellman, SHA-384, and then an elliptic curve based with curve P 384 for authentication. Now each of these are already defined, and it's essentially just telling you the selections that you can use. So while the RFC hasn't been updated, what you can see is you can map it to minimum level of security, take out that minimum level security, and then you sort of have what you would plan. Going to IKE and IPsec, a couple things of note here. One, you cannot use AH. You have to use ESP as part of your for your IPsec connection. And again, this is sort of a common thing here. You have to use AES 256 bits. You have to. That's not an option for the IPv2 exchange. So, as I had mentioned, the use cases you have to use AES/CBC, but the encouragement in Sweet B is to not do that. There's only sort of when you absolutely have to. And again, these are consistent. If you compare the available algorithms in SSH to the available algorithms in IKE and IPsec, you'll see that it's they're essentially the same. And then Sweet B within TLS. The couple of things of note here. So for it to be Sweet B compliant, you have to use AES/GCM. Now the only version of the protocol that supports AES/GCM is 1.2, TLS 1.2. So your connections have to be TLS 1.2. Again, being consistent here, you have to use SHA-384 as part of your pseudo random function, and your cipher suite ID, which was already available in the standard, has to use all elliptic curve and the higher strength algorithms. Now, before I go further, just as of note, right, we talked about it. NSA introduced back some of the traditional cryptography, the finite field Diffie-Hellman, the RSA-based key establishment stuff. So while they haven't, for all of these protocols, while they haven't made a decision how they're going to handle it, if they do decide to update the RFCs, what will likely happen is that those sort of traditional cryptography will be brought back as selections. And again, the goal here is that that vendors or people who provide crypto solutions that use these networking protocols are all able to talk and interoperate with each other, and that it's secure and efficient. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Sweet B and how it relates to the certifications that a lot of us are involved with. First, let's talk about Sweet B and FIPS 140. I actually start with this one because this one's kind of, to me anyway, the most interesting one. So we'll start here. First and foremost, all of the Sweet B crypto algorithms, those are all testable via CAVP. So if you're going to certify a product that's trying to do Sweet B related stuff, you're going to want to test those. And that makes sense, right? Because part of the reason that the Sweet B was selected, the set of ciphers that are in that, is because they're testable and verifiable. Now let's look at it just on a per protocol basis real quick. First, IKE and IPsec 1, each of them, there's a profile for it. There's a RFC for it, so you can see all the algorithms that should be included. They'll have to be included in the crypto module, and they all should be tested. The key derivation mechanism, that should be tested as well, and you must use ESP. You can't use AH. So all of that's completely possible via a FIPS 140 validation. And so now you don't automatically get that when you take a product with IPsec through FIPS certification, but if you provide the options that are available within that RFC, you can be Sweet B compliant. Next is TLS. As I mentioned before, so TLS 1.2 is an approved protocol version, so it's testable, so you can test the KDF that's involved with that. Again, all your algorithms should be tested, and the cipher suite that's required is an approved cipher suite, and you don't have to disallow anything. Of note here, Sweet B requires that this be the first. The RFC requires that this be the first cipher suite that's offered. If you're a client, FIPS nor FIPS nor Common Criteria have a requirement for the ordering of your ciphers, just that you present them. So if you're considering Sweet Bee for in a certified product, you'll have to do that sort of above and beyond. You have to ensure that. You may automatically do that, but you have to ensure that. Oops, backwards. And then finally, the most interesting one, I think, is that for SSH, you can't actually do, you can't actually have a Sweet Bee compliant SSH implementation that's FIPS certified. Now, the reason for that is that, and there's been some talk about this, the ASGCM method that's found in SSH isn't considered secure by the CMVP. So ASGCM is not an option that's available. So if you're going to try to be Sweet Bee compliant in a FIPS evaluation and you're doing management communications, that'll typically either be over an HTTPS TLS connection or an SSH connection. You'd want to have that HTTPS TLS connection. Actually, it's right around SSH, just a quick sidebar, something that I've found interesting. So commonly what will happen is products will go through JEDEC DoD certification, SSH, and FIPS and common criteria. So the JEDEC, if you take it through SSH, they'll typically throw a POAM for a known vulnerability of AES CBC when you're in an SSH implementation. So that means that you have available AES counter, the AES modes that are available are AES counter and AES GCM. If you try to FIPS certify that same product, all of a sudden AES GCM becomes disallowed. So it leaves you with one crypto algorithm, which is AES counter mode, one AES mode available, which is AES counter mode. Then you get the common criteria, and if you are a network product and you're taking it through the NDCPP or previously the NDPP, AES counter mode is not a selectable option. So all of a sudden, you have a product that if you want to take it through those three certifications, which isn't unheard of, you can't use SSH in any mode, regardless if you're trying to be a Sweet Bee compliant or not. So I just thought that was an interesting thing. Sweet Bee and common criteria. So just for the purpose of this, I'm using the NDCPP as an example. As an example, this would apply to you could do this sort of analysis on any of the protection profiles that are out there. So there are two parts where you would sort of find these requirements. One would be in the base crypto requirements, sort of the building block ones, all the FCS, C, KM, COP. So you'll notice here, each one of these contains selectable options that would be compliant with Sweet Bee. So you, when you were going through certification or when you were designing your product, you would just have to make sure that for each of these building blocks, you have these available in your product. So, but just having them there in a library isn't really what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to have it so that it's part of those sort of networking protocols. So Common Criteria also has a couple SFRs associated with those particular protocols. So for TLS, there are two, in the NDCPP, there are two TLS-related SFRs, one if you're a client, and one if you're acting as a client, and one if you're acting as a server. And you'll notice that one of the selectable cipher suites, or it's optional, it's not required now, mind you, it's optional, is the Sweet Bee compliant cipher suite. Also, TLS 1.2 is required by the SFR. So you can position your product in a way that's compliant with the Sweet Bee algorithms that are required. Do note, so for Sweet Bee, there's not, if you're acting as a server, there's not a requirement that you only offer Sweet Bee TLS algorithms, cipher suites. And the reason for that is for interoperability with non-Sweet Bee devices. Otherwise, you're only going to have a relatively small subset talking to a relatively small subset of products on the internet. And this is what I had mentioned earlier. It does require that you present the Suite B cipher suites first. That's not a requirement in the SFRs. Maybe it will be. We're a collaborative community with the Common Criteria community. Maybe that'll be a requirement in the future. But that would be an additional consideration again. For SSH, again, same sort of situation here. You have a client version of an SFR and also a server version of an SFR. The authentication scheme that's required by Suite B for SSH, that is an allowed selection in the SFR, so you're good there. And then the integrity, bulk encryption, decryption, hashing, algorithm selections that are within those SFRs, those are all drawn from the FCS COP requirements that we talked about a little bit earlier, and those are all contain the Suite B algorithms that you would need. So you can again make those selections and have your certification lab verify that you've selected the Suite B algorithms. Oops, I'll learn how to work one of these one day. And then finally, IPsec again. You'll see a sort of a trend here. AES GCM is selectable in the SFR. Supporting ESP mode is a requirement, and also ECDH Group 20, which maps to the Suite B required algorithm, that's selectable. So you have a method for FIPS for every protocol except for SSH to have an Suite B compliance sort of baked into your certification, and then also the same thing here for common criteria, except it's for all the protocols. Now CSFC. So what CSFC does, and as Matt talked about a bit earlier, was they take and they mandate, as part of the process, they mandate certain selections within your common criteria certification. So just because you take a product through common criteria certification, you don't automatically get CSFC, but it's a requirement if you do absolutely want it. So for the purpose of this, and you could do it for each of the components, the CSFC components, I looked at two. The first I looked at was a TLS protected server. So that seems like a pretty common use case. So they have one mandatory selection within that particular use case. Now, interestingly enough, the component definition, the selections that are required, they actually list the wrong SFR. I believe it was the SFR as it was listed in the NDPP, the sort of the old revision. So they didn't actually specify TLS, the client client/server SFRs. So that's probably just an oversight, but so I'm going to say that this applies to both. And they specify and they require, if you will, that you use that Suite B, crypto cipher suite. Pretty, that's what would be expected, right? Because CSFC is sort of the same mission as Suite B was originally developed for. Of note there, it is, again, the min level of security, 192 bits, or the one that's available for up to top secret. So that's consistent with the discussion earlier about the RFC and how it would apply, even under the new sort of guidance from NSA. And then I also looked at the VPN gateway. This one had a little bit more, so there was a bunch more selections, some related to crypto, some primarily related to crypto, some not related to crypto. And just sort of going through it, you'll see that they're mandating, as required selections, the Suite B algorithms. So this is sort of an alignment. You see an alignment and consistent messaging from NSA for products that it wants to procure for classified solutions that use these recommended algorithms. Just a little bit of wrap up on that. Protection profiles absolutely can, and have thus far been crafted in a way that allows Suite B cryptography. FIPS 140 products can and are often built or are regularly built using sweepy algorithms in a compliant manner, except for SSH, which can't use AES-GCM and the FIPS mode of operation. And CC selection is required by CSFC. Again, very unsurprisingly, they're consistent with what's been asked for sweepy cryptography. In short, they play nice together. So you can, if you want to do this and it's something that's of interest to you as a product vendor, to a product vendor, they can absolutely do that. So what's next? So I just put a couple of things up here. There'll be a revision coming to Sweepy. No time frame that I know of anyway has been given. There's a lot of questions around that. So I think it's an interesting topic, but we'll get there when we get there. It's a move to more quantum-resistant cryptography. The older sort of, just generally, the older, weaker cryptography will go away. Potentially a revision to CNSSP 15. So they've sort of delayed that requirement to protect national security systems with Sweepy. At some point when they have figured out what it's going to look like in the future, then they'll likely bring it back. And then other stuff, I don't know. And with that, just a little conclusion. We talked a little bit of background on Sweepy, what it is, et cetera. Identified what the Sweepy crypto is, talked about the components, the bulk encryption, key establishment, authentication or digital signatures, hashing, and how they're used within the commonly certified and commonly used network protocols. And then finally, we just talked a little bit about how Sweepy plays with your certifications. And that's my presentation. Thank you, guys.
Questions?
Okay.
I have a question. May I ask? Seems like the FIPS require the minimum 112 bits of strength of security, and Sweepy ask for much, much more than 112 bits.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. So Sweepy, sort of the minimum level of security that they've identified for top secret security is 192 bits. So just having a FIPS certification without the consideration wouldn't be sufficient. Yeah, it wouldn't be sufficient. So there are sort of some things that aren't covered in Sweepy that you would also have to consider for that, right? So your random number generator, you'd want to use something that provided 250 bits of 256 bits of security strength. You couldn't use 128 bit of security strength cryptography. That's not covered in Sweepy as listed on the NSA website. Maybe that's something they'll reconsider in the future. That's actually a really good point, since there's such an emphasis on certifying random number generating here in the last couple years. So it's a good point.